Blog Talk Welcome. Radio.
Welcome to Pillars on Advertising on franchising. Pillars on Franchising, and today's guest is Meg Roberts, president of Molly Maid. Welcome, Meg.
Thanks, Ray. I appreciate the invitation to join you guys today. This should be fun.
I think it will be.
We hope so.
We have a question for you, Meg. What type of individual makes a good Molly Maid franchise?
Well, that's a great question. I think the Molly Maid franchisee is quite unique. What really makes the best franchisee for us is someone who has the right attitude. The right aptitude is important, but it's a pretty uncomplicated business. So the big differentiator for us, our most successful Molly Maid franchisees just have a terrific attitude, a positive outlook, a servant's heart, if you will, people who really want to focus on not only serving the community with the residential cleaning that we provide, but also serving the community by job creation and employing people who are looking for great places to work and taking care of their community in that way as well. So that's really the differentiator for us, are people with a great sunny side up attitude.
Absolutely. Sunny side is a good way of describing that. I feel that when Martha and I were looking, that is one of the things that really attracted us to Molly Maid, was simply the fact that everybody seemed to have the right attitude. It wasn't just about business and numbers. It was about people and giving back to the community.
Absolutely. It's not a business where if you focus only on the numbers that you have a high likelihood of success, because it really is about engaging with people. You're doing a service in someone's home that is their most valuable asset, with their prized possessions, and creating a sense of trust only happens if you can build a relationship. And generally, you can only build a relationship if you're someone who really is truly and authentically interested in other people and has that attitude of wanting to get to know someone and wanting to, be an assistant and a part of their life and problem solving.
Absolutely. I think authentic and I like to use the word genuine person. And a lot of times you can, just talking to an individual, you can tell if they're a genuine person by the way if they look at you when they talk. And, there's so many people out there that seem to have a different agenda. And I think one of the attributes of nearly every single Molly Maid owner that I've ever met is they're genuine people and they have an authentic attitude.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly, and I've been lucky enough to meet, plus 300 of them over the last decade.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So one of the other questions is, I know we've kind of answered this a little bit, and I know when I was looking to open the business, I looked at a lot of different franchises. What specifically would you say is the I know we talked about attitude and giving back to the community and things like that. What other attribute do you think a potential Molly Maid, the franchise owner, would need?
Well, I think someone who is trying to achieve a good outcome without overcomplicating it. So oftentimes if we have executives who came from, very high-powered former careers that required a lot of complex thought and assessment and constant diving into the data, that's a little more than is required in this business. Really being thoughtful and observant and aware is what makes for success. Certainly we have to be looking at our P&L, and we've got to be looking at our numbers and our cost of goods and all of those things. But the greatest level of success is part of that awareness. How do my employees feel when they come to work? You know, they're going to do a really long day of cleaning homes. Am I doing something to create an environment that they're happy to show up at? So it's a thoughtfulness, an attentiveness, a real sincerity in the interest of the employee. And I'll tell you, that's one of the things that I think is most different about Molly Maid relative to other franchisors as well. One of the first things I always hear our franchisees talk about are the great stories, uplifting stories that they want to share about their employees. They're not starting out by saying how much money I made or this fancy new car that I bought. And many of them have all of those wonderful trappings, but the greatest success and their sense of achievement has come from the accomplishments of their employees.
Absolutely. And I don't know if I had ever shared this with anybody before, but in talking to an employee one day, I you know, she said that the best time of her day is in the morning when she gets to work. And of course I say, how could that be? You know, nobody wants to go to work, you know? And she says, well, I'm here with my friends. I know everybody. We have a great time just talking to each other before we head out, you know, to our individual jobs. And she says, but at the end of the day, when I get home, well, I got to make sure I have enough groceries. I got to make sure food is cooked. I got to make sure the kids get their homework done. And she goes on and on with a long list of things. She says, so the best time of my day is coming to work in the morning at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really fantastic.
Of being with a team. There's something so satisfying for me when I'm out on the road traveling and I get to visit with franchisees to go to their morning meetings and actually show up a half hour before the meeting. That's always the fun time when the ladies are teasing one another or checking out somebody's new shoes mm-hmm. or hairstyle, and it's very much the camaraderie, kind of a, you know, mini sorority of sorts where, and there's of course some guys in there too, but just a real community of women supporting one another. And then we're out helping largely other women in their homes to manage their families and their jobs and all the complexity. So it's definitely a community and that sort of spirit of it takes a village, and I really love that about the business.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's one of the things that I've begin to realize even more and more is that we are just nothing but a big family. And we begin... You know, nobody calls me Mr. Pillar. It's always Ray. How are you? And you know, and one of the I'm in an office building, and a HR person from another company stopped me one day, and she says, you know, how is it that all your employees are so friendly? She says that everybody greets her. She doesn't know. They don't know her. And, you know, they greet her and say good morning or, you know, hi or something like that. And I says, well, you know, it's how we treat our employees. And she just kind of shook her head. Now, this is an HR person from another company. You know,
well,
so I took that
telling,
as a,
isn't it?
Yeah, I took it as an extreme compliment, you know, because
it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So... A question for you. You've been, according to all published or published articles, you've been kind of a change agent at Molly Maid in your tenure. From what I've read, embracing mobile websites, social media, PR to boost the brand's online presence. What was the most difficult part of changing, making that happen?
You know, your timing of the question is kind of funny because I think I'm facing about the I'll probably be facing the biggest challenge here in the next several months because we're coming up on a big brand refresh after 35 years, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But it also requires a lot of patience and a lot of understanding when you're asking people to revisit the brand identity and perhaps look at how it should evolve as we modernize as a business. You know, for me, I think the hardest part was not the work itself, because I've been in advertising and marketing and corporate America for a long time. So the process of change, the project management, website building, you know, all of that strategic stuff I'm used to comes more easily. What I've really learned and where I've grown in my career was I was introduced to franchising 10 years ago, and it didn't occur to me the importance of the relationship in making change when I am an agent to all of my franchisees who are basically my clients, and that's how I must treat them. So I don't get the choice to just make a change and impart it. Certainly a franchisor could do that, but that is not the type of person I am. So it holds you accountable to really believing in what you're asking others to do, because you have to be persuasive and convincing and authentic. So for me, the biggest, I guess I wouldn't say it was a challenge, but the biggest learning opportunity was how to become a true and fair and valued, thoughtful partner. And that's the most important aspect of my job, and it's what I value the most. And I've learned it from having all of these franchisees willing to partner with me.
So we're getting a brand refresh in the near future?
We are, yeah. So we're 35 years young, or 36 years young. We've had three different iterations of our website since I began at the company 10 years ago, and that's not terribly rapid, but it's pretty quick. But we are moving on to our fourth iteration here, which will be launching this June. It's going to have a lot of kind of upgraded bells and whistles and opportunities for potential customers to interact with our brand, to better understand what ranges of pricing might look like, to kind of customize things online so they can better understand what our service provides. But beyond that, we are actually looking at refreshing the brand itself. So we're still, of course, wedded to our name and very much so wedded to our colors, although even the colors have evolved in the last 2 years to a more modern kind of rich and darker pink together with the navy blue. But yes, I predict you will see a different brand identity. Specifically, right now we have a bonnet that represents the brand, and that's going to be evolving. So you'll see how that evolves in terms of future uniforms and print collateral, and maybe even what our vehicles might look like. And I say these things with a little trepidation, because I know the fear in the franchise community is, what's this going to cost me? And the reality is, we have no intention of rolling things out and not giving people appropriate time or generating waste of things that have been recently created. But the biggest place we make our brand impression is in the online space, and that's an easy and cost-free place for us to make a change. And, you know, over time, probably adapt our uniforms a little bit to represent the new mark. But it's pretty exciting when you're 30-some years old and you haven't changed one bit. It's going to be exciting. So we'll reveal all of that at our convention in about 6 weeks' time.
And I can't wait. That sounds really exciting.
I love hearing that, Ray. I know you'll be excited. I'm super pumped. What we've seen initially is really great, and we have, we've done the due diligence of now going on our third month of in-depth research with our current customers, website users, testing different logos, testing different taglines, you know, running 300 people through different website modules, and 2,000 people through different logos and iterations and customer profiles. So we have made a huge investment in making sure that we are properly positioning the brand and capitalizing on, you know, being the first name in maid service, because we are. So we're excited about what we're doing there.
Yeah, I certainly know that we are in this area. But you mentioned that you started 10 years ago with a company, with Molly Maid, and I think with the respect of that, kind of give us a little bit of a background of what steps you took when you started with Molly Maid, and then lead that, if you wouldn't mind, lead that into what advice would you give women who want to aspire to your position as, you know, president of a company?
Oh, sure. Thank you for asking that question. I love to answer it and specifically address it as it relates to women in the workforce. I was raised by two parents who both had military background. My dad was in the Marines and served in Vietnam, and There's very little room for error in our households growing up. Very high expectations of achievement and equality. And, you know, my favorite T-shirt growing up said, girls can do anything, boys can do better, because my parents said, you know, you can do anything that you want to do. I spent a lot of time on my academics in college. I spent a lot of time interning and testing out different careers, but I always knew I liked marketing, and I did that for many years in Chicago, and returned to Michigan and kind of stumbled into this part-time job at this little company called Molly Made, helping them with a website. And I get a lot of credit for doing a lot of things there in the online environment and making a lot of changes, but the truth is I didn't do anything that any other smart marketer wouldn't have done, which is realize just the absolute riches of this brand name and make more out of it. So it wasn't rocket science. It was good timing and you know, someone who was dedicated to their craft. And I did that for, 5 years, I think, and was, you know, happened to be in the employment of the company when they made a management change in upper management and asked me if I would take the gig leading the company. And I said, no, thank you. You know, I'd really prefer to stay in marketing because it was my comfort zone, really my comfort zone. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't academically trained in finance and econ and law and all the other aspects of franchising. But I thought to myself, you know what? Every one of my franchisees has taken a chance and done something different by buying this business, which is not at all what they were doing 5 years earlier or 10 years earlier. So you know what? If they think I can do this, I'm going to give it a try. And so here we are 5 years later, and I absolutely love it. And I've learned I wasn't a great marketer. I had a lot of good luck and good timing, and I'm a better relationship and strategy person. And I truly, truly appreciate the opportunity that I've been given. And I also feel firmly that as a woman, you got to work as hard as everyone else. And I'm not suggesting we don't. I think we always do. But we cannot make excuses and suggest that we might be being held back by our gender. I think that dialogue, we spend time on it when we can be spending time on just getting ahead. Being assertive is important. You know, being smart about your decision making and the choices you make in your career, and really representing yourself with polish and professionalism and equality at all times. I've never felt in my career, I've been lucky, I've never felt that I've been in a position where I was underrepresented or overlooked in relationship to a male colleague. But I also have never stopped to think about it until the recent developments and the important stories that are being told. And I think it's because I was not willing to allow that to happen. I didn't slow down for that. And I was blessed that I've worked with really terrific leaders, men and women. So I think, you know, as women, we need to use our voices. We need to use our brains. We need to be dedicated to what is important to us. And we need to speak up when things are not as they should be. You know, working together, women creating a workforce where we're supportive of one another, not competitive, but supportive of one another as we all work to accomplish more in an environment that we should be a part of every day.
Absolutely.
So have you contemplated writing a book about your experiences?
I have not contemplated writing a book. I have contemplated writing a book about growing up in an Irish Catholic family, because I've got oodles and oodles of stories of my siblings and myself that really lend themselves to what I've been sharing. But what I'm really contemplating is a run for office one day. So that's where all of my energy will not go toward writing a book, but hopefully toward service in another capacity at some point.
Well, you got
you know, the last two presidents have written books, so maybe you need a book and go run for president.
Yeah, well, I really would emulate one of them. I won't say which, but I think I wouldn't start with a book. I don't have much of a story to tell yet, but hopefully I can start serving my community in a political fashion at some point in the next 10 years or so, and we'll see where it goes from there. You know, I think there's lots of room and lots of need for more women in our federal government, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
you know,
so I know we're running out of time with you. Is there any last advice you'd like to give our listeners, or to Ray or myself for that matter?
Well, you know, I certainly don't have advice for Ray, because Ray is someone that that I look to and really try to reflect how he operates, how he treats his employees, what his attitude is every day. Ray is a dear friend to me and a great representative of what it means to be a small business owner and to be in franchising. It's being part of the system, contributing to the system, and challenging the system. And I think Ray and his dear wife Martha did that for so many years and will continue to do it going forward, that a partner doesn't mean that you always agree. It means that you're thoughtful and that you're considerate, and when you have an idea that might be different or better, you share it. And that's the recommendation I would give for anyone who's interested in franchising, is to think about your willingness to participate, to partner, and to contribute, because all three of those things are needed, and all three of those things make every franchise better if they have that type of representative as a part of their community.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I also get when people ask me about advice about starting a franchise is, look for a franchise that cares about the franchisee, because there's
yes.
too many of them out there. That's all they care about is themselves and how much money they can make. Unfortunately, if they don't care about the franchisee, they don't make any money. So,
that's correct.
You know, that's,
yep, absolutely.
You know, that's,
if you're thinking about franchising, it's important to obviously meet with the franchisor and get a sense of how they treat people, but it's also very important to do your homework and validate. The best validation comes from calling 6 or a dozen franchisees within that system, not the people right around the corner from where you might open, those people and people who are 3 states away and, you know, 600 miles
mm-hmm.
further south than you are, to really get a sense for, you know, a cross-section of their franchisees and how they feel, because what they feel and what they represent will give you a good barometer for how you might feel if you decided to join them in business.
Yeah, and it wouldn't help to call a few people who were no longer in that same
Absolutely.
Franchise that
yep.
you're looking
at. Absolutely,
we always
encourage that. We
yeah.
always encourage
and
that. I don't fear that at all. I think it's generally pretty transparent. You know, if there's more salt and vinegar, then it's usually, you know, someone can see through that, and
mm-hmm.
I believe you catch more bees with honey than vinegar. So that's my attitude, and it is time for me to sign off, guys. I know you're going to continue. I really appreciate you having me today, Ray. It's always good to catch up, and I look forward to seeing you in Phoenix and you standing up and clapping when you see all the new stuff that's going to come out.
I can't wait. Thank
okay,
you so much.
We'll talk to you soon. You're very welcome.
Thanks.
Have a great day. Wow, that was really great, Ray.
Yeah, I think that turned out to be fantastic. And I'm looking forward to, I haven't talked to anybody yet about future guests, but I think this can be quite exciting. I have quite a few people in mind, and maybe you have a few people as well. And, you know, we'll have to see, how it goes.
Well, I do have one potential guest lined up for next week. I won't say who it is yet. Because I'm also talking to a couple other people tomorrow, so we should have some more great guests coming. Every time I've talked to people about the show, they just seem to be really, really pumped, because when you look at it, there's not a lot. I mean, there, in a sense, there's a whole lot out there about franchising, but there doesn't seem to be a lot So in other words, the uniqueness about this show is the fact that we have somebody like you who's been a successful franchisee, and then there's somebody like me who isn't a franchisee but supports franchisees. So you kind of
mm-hmm.
get the inside
mm-hmm.
and the outside viewpoint of it.
I think there's a lot of rhetoric out there, negative rhetoric about franchises, and the franchisors out there have no one to blame but themselves, because in the process of looking for what franchise I was going to be involved in, I came across some really interesting franchises that I thought, you know, from the perspective of a potential franchisee would be great. But when you begin to talk to the corporate people, it's not so good. And, of course, the information you receive from them is – interesting as well, such in the way in the way of litigation that is pending on many of these franchises when you do the research. And of course, you need to do that research before you invest, that kind of money.
Yeah, and anyone who out there who's thinking of investing in a franchise, I would recommend you find the franchise disclosure document, the FDD, that all franchisors are supposed to, you have to file with the state you got a franchise in. And if you don't want to pay the money for a franchise disclosure document, you can go to the state of California, the state of Minnesota, or I think it's the state of Wisconsin. And if a franchise is located in one of those states, they will have the FDD there. And, okay, so having gone through Molly Maid's and a very large tax audit company that will remain nameless, who had, 300 pages, I can tell you that there's a whole lot of good stuff in there, and they're also great, but I would not recommend reading it before you go to bed because it will put you to sleep really fast.
Well, there's one thing I know about numbers is you can make numbers to turn out any way you want them to. It's just the way you put them down on paper.
Yeah. Now, the thing I found interesting about the FDD is that it actually, as you and Meg were talking about, calling other franchise or franchisees of that franchise, the basic contact information for all franchisees in a franchise is in the franchise disclosure doc. And most of them will show up people. I think they also list people that that have left the franchise. And a very intelligent, great franchise lawyer that I know, Michael Liss, he's in Oak Brook, and I'm hoping to get him on the show soon. But he's the first one I know who said, you go to the FDD, you look for people in there, you give them a call, you talk to them, whether they're still there or not, you find things out and see how they look at it, which, amazingly enough, was exactly what you and Meg were saying, the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You have to do the research. Otherwise, you're stuck with something. In another life, when I was before franchising, I worked with a company that went to automotive places. And talking to the owners at these different automotive businesses, they all the ones I talked to had so much negativity about the franchisor and how they were getting screwed for one thing or another, and I actually had a very negative feeling about franchises, so it was a difficult decision for me to go ahead with a franchise. But when I learned the success rate of a franchise as opposed to a going out on your own, owning your own business, it made a huge difference. I correct me if I'm wrong, Fred, but I think it's 85% success rate with a franchise, and without a franchise, it's an 85% approximately failure rate. Is that about right?
Actually, from what I've heard, it's more like a 92% failure rate.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, so I think this show, this program, and our listeners, if you're thinking about getting into franchising, stay tuned, because we're going to, have various people who own franchises, and I know I'm going to have more Molly Maid owners because I think the group of people that we have are very positive people, and they have a great outlook not only on their business but on life. So, this is something that you might want to, if you're beginning to think about owning a franchise, you might want to listen to.
So a couple of things I would say to that. One, for the most part, you're right. Most Molly Maid franchise owners are upbeat and great people to work with. And yet, There's still a couple of cranky ones that I've been able to run into. And we won't name names, so we'll just kind of leave it there. But something I learned today. So I was in a mastermind meeting with the Franchise Referral Network, and we were talking about the same topic of what type of individual will be a successful franchisee. And one of the things that came out today is I know that with Molly Made, you guys have people who purchase franchisees go in and work at existing franchise. I've met a couple that have been at your franchise working there. And I love those because they become clients later, but never mind. But see, in my stupidity, I thought every franchisor did that. And I was quickly told that I was wrong, that most franchisors or most franchisees, if best case scenario, they might have you come to class for a couple of weeks or something like that. But for the most part, there's not that what I'll call internship. So you mm-hmm. are rare.
Yeah. I mean, we do have an internship. Two years ago, I hosted four new franchisees, and they're there pretty much to observe. We try to give them as much of a rounded, encompassing feel for what the business is like, and we also cater to what they feel they're weak in, and try to give them some information regarding that. So that is part of the course. There's a course, I can't remember how long it is. I think it's a week, maybe two, in Ann Arbor, and then but it is your choice as well. I mean, I believe as a new franchisee, you're asked if you'd like to visit a franchise that has been in business for a while and how they're running things, but I don't know if that is demanded of you. I think the only thing that's somewhat demanded is you attend the first convention that you're a franchisee. So other than that, that's another thing about this particular franchise is it's not like some franchises where you have to buy their product and you have to set the prices according to what they say. Not with this particular franchise. You have more leeway in the products you buy and how you run your business and the prices you charge, which gives you a lot more freedom as opposed to people that are really locked into exactly how they do it and what they do and how much they charge.
So much out there. To me, that's the way you should run a franchise, is by an internship. I think that's just a phenomenal thing.
Mm-hmm. Phenomenal. I mean, there are certain things that you cannot change in a franchise, and those are the things that you buy a franchise for. So the logo is huge. You cannot change that. You can't change the type. You can't change the color and how it's presented, because that is one of the main reasons you buy a franchise for, is the recognition of logos. And the franchise is pretty strict about using a certain font when you type the name of the franchise. But they also have more leeway in other areas where they can give you leeways, which I think is important, because most people don't buy a franchise to be locked in lockstep or whatever the franchisor says.
And from what I've seen is obviously we've known each other for a while now and learned that you got to color, as I put it, color within the lines of the franchise. I do find that many franchisees I talk to, they initially they do have that I'm getting everything from corporate that I need, and yet the thing that it seems like most of them miss is understanding, at least, well, let's put it this way, from the marketing point of view, being able to market to their local audience, and also to allow the, because to me, what makes a franchisee successful, and nothing I heard today that tells me any different, but it's the franchisee himself, the drive, the passion, the intelligence that makes them successful. But yet, many of them never seem to let that personality, their personality, seep through. So people want to know who they're talking to. They want to know who the individual is behind it. And without letting that personality seep through, without understanding that local culture, that to me seems to be when franchisees die, is that they're out of step with who they are and who their people in their local geographic area are. So it can't merge with the brand, or they can't infuse into the brand. Am I talking gibberish, or did that make sense?
Well, to a certain degree, I can give two examples of franchises that had failed. In one example, the individual insisted on a certain type of advertising, and that was all they did, and they spent a lot of money on it. And they were told by myself and many, many other people that this particular type of advertising has a success rate of a fraction of less than 1%. But they insisted on doing it. All right. What is it? What is it? What do you think it is?
Go ahead. Continue. Go ahead. Continue.
All right. And he eventually ended up, you know, being very disappointed in the amount of revenue he was generating, and decided to sell. Now, interestingly enough, the person who bought the franchise is doing absolutely great. You know, and you know, his franchise is growing. In another example, he was what do they call it? I'm trying to think of the name. They call it a type of individual who thinks it has to be done his way or no other way.
Fred? Oh, sorry. No,
but anyway,
that's what Michelle said.
This particular individual had a particular way he thought things should be done, which varied greatly from the model, and the model obviously has a success rate. And if you wish to vary from that, you know, maybe you might want to experiment to see if you have greater success. But if you begin to have less of a success rate, then you need to go back to the original model, which, you know, this franchise had developed. And this person decided not to do that, and therefore, he, again, was very disappointed in the amount of revenue that I think the word they use sometimes is anal retentive, and this guy had a very specific idea how things should be done, and he was, you know, imprinting this on his employees, and to the point where he was having a hard time keeping employees, and at the same time, he was losing, you know, potential customers.
See, actually, you had the first two words correct, but you didn't have the full phrase. It's anal retentive chowderhead, I think, is the correct phrase.
Chowderhead, okay. Yeah. But, you know, he had the right idea about getting the franchise, and he bought the right franchise, you know, but like I said, he was deviating from the business model significantly to cause problems for himself.
Silly people. All they had to do was call Fred. Never mind. So we had fun today, didn't we?
I certainly did. Yeah.
I did.
And I really appreciated of Meg getting on the show. She is an extremely busy person, as you could tell by the way she, you know, needed to run off in between visiting franchises. And when have you ever heard of a president of a franchise going out and visiting, you know, other franchises?
I can't say that I have. The only thing that was a bummer about it was I know back in 2012 she was actually featured on an episode of the arts and entertainment show Be the Boss. So we'll have to have her back on later to ask to quiz her about that.
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, there was a program about I can't. What's the name of the show? You said it.
Be the Boss, and there were two.
Be the Boss.
Two
yeah.
Molly Maid.
Yeah.
Two Molly Maid franchisee or employees were given an opportunity to compete for a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
And from what I've read, it was a really compelling episode. I haven't been able to find
it
online to
good.
Watch it. Yeah. Do you have it on recording?
I do not. I thought it was a pretty good show. I watched it.
Okay.
Be the Boss.
Yeah. We'll have to get her back on and quiz her about the show. After all, when you're the boss, you can work at nothing all day, as the song says. So we're running out of time at this point. We want to thank those who actually were able to call in, even if they didn't want to ask questions. Love seeing people call in. Love knowing people are listening. Ray, what's your final thoughts on franchising?
Be prepared, both mentally and financially. That's one of the biggest things I tell people is, no matter what franchise you decide to go with, if they say, as an example, you'll need $75,000, then you better have $150,000 ready, because you'll need it in case the economy decides to take a dip, and nobody wants to invest a lot of money and then find out they're going to lose it all because the economy took a dip. And these things are temporary, and if you're not prepared to go the course during that time when, you know, it's going to be hard to get business, then you're going to lose everything you have invested, not just your money, but your time.
That is excellent advice. I was in the one mastermind I was in earlier today. That was actually one of the things they said, is make sure you're funded appropriately and that you've got the drive and vision to stay the course. And it's with that drive and vision which will take you through the hard times.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, folks.
Yeah, one of the things. Go ahead. Are we going to wrap it up?
Go ahead.
We're wrapping it up. All right.
You got a minute, my friend.
Okay. I got a minute. And now I lost my train of thought. absolutely. If you don't have the money, then don't even do it, because you're going to just be disappointed. I don't remember what I was going to think now. I have 30 seconds. So one of the things that people forget about is, if you're starting a franchise, you're not working, you have no income. So who's going to pay the mortgage of your home and the heating bills? Sometimes people forget about that. They think, in 6 months I'll start getting money from the franchise. You may be years before you actually begin to make money. And the thing you got to remember, though, is the reward at the end is fantastic. Owning your own business is fantastic.
And that, folks, is a pillar of franchising. And you heard it from our host, Ray Pillar. So we'll talk to you next week. And if you got questions or questions or comments, you can hit us on the Link Local Network Facebook page or the Molly Maid Molly Maid Aurora Naperville Facebook page. Leave your questions and we'll answer them. Or next week, call us in at 323-580-5755. We'll see you next Thursday at 4 p.m. Central. Bye now.
Good night, everyone.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.